This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
It's kind of like an early birthday present for me. I love this. Doc and I just get to go four rounds of throwdown. This is just exciting times. I like hanging out and having a chat with you. I love having our guests. We have the best guests of any show probably in the state. But I will say that I really enjoy just having a chat with you, Doc.
Good to have you back.
I'm loving it. So let me start with the biggest news of the week. This is the biggest
hot
news by far.
Hot off the presses.
Yes. The very biggest news. We'll get to your list in a minute, but I'm going to start with mine. The Rogue One Star Wars trailer was released this week, and can I tell you, you have not seen it?
No.
Have you been hiding under a rock? It's probably got 40 bazillion views on YouTube. It is going to be one of the most amazing films ever. Rogue One is the trailer is out and available. You can find it, of course, on KTR.com because we're cool like that. So other than that, I've got nothing. Nothing else happened this week, right?
Well, Big news. And Donald Trump came up with this ironclad plan. Not only are we going to build this wall, this is how we're going to get Mexico to pay for the wall. You ready?
And this has been the gripe the whole time, though. This has been the gripe the whole time. We've heard it. Okay, you're going to build the wall. Great. Okay, how are you going to do that? You're going to cut taxes. How are you going to do that? Now we start seeing some meat on the bone. What does said meat look like?
Okay, it's a multiple point pun. On day one, I will promulgate a rule amending the wire transfer regulations, and it will also include a requirement that no alien, that is a non-citizen, may wire money outside of the United States unless that alien first provides a document establishing their lawful presence in the United States.
This is the threatening part,
right? What I'm going to do unless you give us money.
Okay, because what we're talking about now, it's not just Donald Trump building the wall. This isn't his plan to build the wall. He didn't lay out blueprints. This is the plan to get Mexico to fund the entire wall. So first step. Threaten. And by the way, threaten those that are here, because a lot of people are here. A lot of illegal aliens are here because they're sending money home. They're working and sending money home.
That is a huge part gigantic. Of the motivation.
Right.
Is there's employment here. It pays 6 to 8 times as much as employment in Mexico.
Right. And how about a good chunk of the economy of mm-hmm. Mexico's increasing and bettering economy is money flowing from here
but
to there.
But the club. They're sending home billions and billions of dollars back to Mexico. And unless you pay for send us a check on day two, we're getting there. But this is day one. I'm reading point. Off the plan.
Day one. Every Western Union says no more. Can't do it.
So what do you think of that?
What do I think of that? I think it's out of left field. I didn't see that coming by any stretch of the imagination. I thought he was just going to cut off any type of funding we were giving Mexico, which is one of our, especially Arizona, one of our biggest trade partners. I think it's an interesting thought. I really don't know if I'm for or against it because I didn't see it coming.
I got two thoughts.
Number one,
and this is the easy part.
Okay.
We just got through a furor over Obama issuing executive orders. I don't think you can do this one on an executive order.
Okay.
But even if you could, okay, here's the problem. This is why there's no way. It took me about 5 seconds to get to this one. Almost all undocumented people that are here are part of a network of a very hybrid family. They got friends, they got family who are citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So they just go to their brother, their cousin, their coworker,
and
say, "You do it."
Right.
And there's no way on God's earth you can stop that.
Sure.
If the only person who could wire, if all these folks had no friends, then maybe would be a club.
But I would say this, though, and I would say this. It would be difficult for Mexico to shrug that off and just say, they're going to have a friend do it. It's okay. They're going to have a buddy do it. And hold on a second, because that's rolling the dice in ensuring that that's going to happen. So if this threat has teeth, it's got dull teeth, but it's got a little bit of teeth, I would say. Well, it makes them think. There's pause for thought.
Well, I mean, the remittances to Mexico are certainly significant.
Sure, absolutely.
That is, if there, I don't think there's a way to shut that off without closing down all international commerce.
Or taking a slight reduction as far as a percentage if some do stop doing that. I don't know if they roll. I think it has some teeth, yeah.
By the way, before I saw the details, I thought, well, he's going to cut off wire transfers to Mexico. I said, well, maybe he can do that. And then it took me again about another 10 seconds to get to, well, they'll just wire it to Hong Kong, and Hong Kong will wire it to Mexico, unless you're going to cut
a slight fee.
Well, you know,
sure,
yeah,
but heck yeah, I'd charge.
But I mean, there's a whole industry out there that is in the business of doing that. So that anyway, so he proposed that's what's on day one. I'm not going to do that. He says that's the threat. If on day two, he says you give us. Cut us a check to pay for the wall.
And okay, so it's one. Okay. It's okay. So basically, hold on. So as far as Trump's plan to have Mexico finance the wall, it is I'm going to cut off wire transfers, money flow from aliens here in the United States to their families or friends in Mexico on day one. If that's
I'm going to threaten to it.
Okay, I'm going to threaten to it if you don't do it on if you don't send us a check on day two.
Yeah.
But that's if they send a check on day two, then it's okay. All right. Free
then
flow
it's
money,
over.
Right? Okay.
Ain't going to happen.
I understand that. I'm talking from the Trump side.
I've heard language in response to this, proposed wall from a former president of Mexico that's not repeatable without getting bleeped here.
Right.
And language that we have, you know, that because the answer to this is not no, it's blank no.
Okay. Well, from a former president, that's saying something. Yeah. The current president, like I said, some teeth to it kind of dull.
Anyway, here's his next point of leverage. He says Mexico needs access to his markets much more so than in the reverse. We have all the leverage.
So he's saying that the United States is holding all the cards when it comes to our trade. And they need us a lot more than we need them.
Yeah. And
so he's,
and
about
so he's going
trade.
To cancel visas. Okay. And basically, we have hundreds of thousands of visas that are issued to their nationals every year. And it's one of our great leverage points.
Okay. All right.
You have a reaction to that?
I think he could do that. I think that's something that he can do. I think that there's definitely something that he can do. Obviously, we've seen Barack Obama do something kind of in reverse, or maybe turn a blind eye to certain visas. Yeah. And look, I think that could possibly happen. Does it get him through primaries and primary wins? Darn right it does.
You're going to have Armageddon.
Can he do that?
You're going to have Armageddon in Arizona as Nogales, Arizona goes into a complete free fall. The entire economy is based upon Mexicans crossing the border and doing shopping.
You think when he's trying to become the president of the United States that he's concerned about Nogales, Arizona?
It's one of many places, border towns.
But you see what I'm saying. Do you honestly think he's worried about the border towns unless he can stand up and say, wait, for the greater good.
Yeah.
For the greater good. It's okay. That's, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go ahead and fund some of those towns. We're going to build great economies. You know how he does this.
Yeah.
I'm going to build great towers. I'm going to build this and that.
I'm saying there will be a scream, and not just I don't like this scream, a scream at the level of I'm running a grocery store or an appliance store or something in Nogales or El Paso or you name it, and you have just put me out of business.
We'll get to the finer points right after the break of Trump forcing Mexico and exactly how he's going to do it to build this wall. And how much is it going to cost? You're on The Think Tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right, we are going over the finer details of Trump's plan to have Mexico finance the wall, the Trump wall, I think he was alluding to. And, Doc, you said he had a few more to go. I do want to get to cost at 1.2.
Visa fees, he says. And this is what, by the way, I'm reading this verbatim off of his two-page plan, okay? Even a small increase in visa fees would pay for the wall. This includes fees on border crossing cards, which he could put in, of which more than a million are issued a year.
Okay.
Now, I did some simple arithmetic. Okay. The low estimate, and I think it's way, way low, for building the wall is $10 billion.
That's what I hear.
If you divide that by a million visas, you'd have to charge $10,000 for a visa.
Sure.
People who are crossing the border
do that in a year. He's not going to have it funded in a year.
Maybe in 1,000 years. I mean, people who are these are people crossing the border to buy groceries or canned goods or something in Nogales and places like that. And then they're walking back. They're doing it to save $5 or $10.
Sure. No, I understand that. Yeah, and obviously, yeah. obviously it's but once again, something he can do. Something he can do. Maybe, will it fund
whether or not he could do it without a law, I don't know.
If he said but if he said mm-hmm. if he said yeah, he can change yeah. visa fees. Yeah, absolutely. The Department of Homeland Security could do that. The Border Patrol can change visa fees. You don't need to act to Congress, I don't think, to change the fee.
I honestly don't know. Yeah, maybe you can.
Put
it
in a package
somewhere.
I don't
know. It depends on whether
like
it's some things are in legislation on what you shall do and other things aren't.
Now, just to the price of it real quickly, in low estimate, and I'll say low estimate, is $10 billion. So in a low estimate, I'm not a build-a-wall guy by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. But in the grand scheme of things in our government, what's $10 billion, even if we funded it? Obviously, if it was $10 billion, we poured more than that into the Phoenix VA, and it's still a schlumpy town. You see what I'm saying?
If our national security were truly on the line or the wall was really a vital interest, $10 billion or $20 billion is something that we could do.
Yeah, no big deal at all.
And I've seen people actually try to do it. They get into questions of, well, how high is the wall going to be? And when you go from 10 feet to 30 feet, that's a completely different number.
Whole new ballgame, right.
And all of those numbers look extremely low ball. Once you started doing some back of the envelope stuff on how many pounds of concrete and what is it going to be made of and how high, just materials and the like. I think the bigger question is, of course, would it do anything?
And it's symbolic. You know, it is symbolic. Like, I think the stat came out the last week or the week before. We found another partially completed, almost completed tunnel digging through. And I think we find 150 a year or something silly like that.
When you have a tunnel, it doesn't matter how high the wall
is.
When you go from 10 feet to 80 feet, the tunnel is no less effective.
And once again, on KTR.com, we have a video of a few smugglers, and they've got the giant bricks of weed on their backs, and do you see them scale that fence?
My God, that was like they were walking horizontally,
like Spider-Man. It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, but that was absolutely incredible.
Right.
It was like effortless. Now these are kids in good shape, and you know they had the right equipment, but
it was well done.
Not a barrier. In fact, it was such a small barrier than when they sort of got the hint that maybe someone was filming them, they just ran back to the Mexican side.
So if they build a wall, maybe instead of the weed on their back, maybe they just have grocery bags and they scale, go down, go grocery shopping, come on back. See, we can fix this for you guys.
So this is the problem when you get into making a concrete plan, which is now you can pick it apart. I think there's an underlying assumption here about his views on international trade that, to me, are not. His presumption is we got all these deals with all these other countries and they're sticking it to us and we're getting the mm-hmm. short end of it. And therefore, we have the leverage. And I can't think of any. There's smart people who have businesses up the kazoo behind them when they negotiate. Some of these trade agreements run 10,000 pages. And you know why? Because they got a line in there for every single conceivable kind of product. And the company that makes that product is in there to make sure that they get the right number on that. And they are very intricate deals. We'll give you a little bit of this. You give us a little bit of that. And the thought that the world is sticking to it, I got a lot more faith in our folks.
I would say that I have faith. I have faith in our folks. What I do know is that Donald Trump is running in a primary right now. He is trying to. He's in a nomination fight right now, and that is what his base, and I'm talking about the ones that come out and vote in primaries, think that darn right, the world is sticking it to us.
And by the way, let me also note and acknowledge that in any intricate deal like this, there's winners and losers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a worker who used to work in a textile factory in South Carolina, you're probably not happy about the net effect of all these deals.
Right.
And to you, because what happens is there's stuff cheaper in your view of a trade deal is it ought to have a massive tariff on foreign imports of textiles.
Mm-hmm.
And we could get that, but we wouldn't get that for free.
Sure. Right.
You know, somebody would do something to us. And so you have, look at your electronics cabinets, look at your iPhone, look at every other. Most of the goods that we buy, electronics and the like, clothing, have gotten a way, way cheaper over there. Somebody went back and looked at what a pair of socks cost 30 years ago, and it was like unbelievable more expensive than now.
Right.
And that's all winners and losers. And if you happen to be somebody that is on the short end of that, you think that trade is, you know, the international trade is a lousy deal.
But these are a lot of the same people that are screaming and hollering for a $15 an hour minimum wage, making the cost of employment here higher, making the cost of manufacturing here higher, and then more products are going to be made outside of our borders.
Low-tech manufacturing has already left this country.
I understand that. So if we keep sweeping across, because this week California and California and New York laid out their plans, actually passed their laws that would increase their state minimum wage to by 2026.
But you know, there is a basic equilibrium in this. Do you know that over the last 10 years, wages in China have approximately tripled? In other words, over the long haul, these things equalized. And China's outsourcing to Vietnam and India.
Okay, the bar was set pretty low when you're talking about China's economy, their wages. Mm-hmm. The bar was set really, really low. It was.
They were
not making a lot of money
No, it was a low number.
That's what I'm saying.
But the point is that as they industrialize and as you have more and more trade, their wages tend to raise.
Right.
And it has downward pressure on our wages.
But and on the other side, because I like to stay fair, believe it or not, I really do. The other side of the minimum wage debate. Check this stat out, Doc. I didn't like this one, I promise. Because by $15 an hour, prices of everything going to skyrocket. Of the hourly workers in this country, how many are making minimum wage currently as a percentage?
15?
Three. That's what that's going to affect. It's going to tick off a lot of people above them that were working hard and making $10 an hour.
$15 an hour wages not coming in. They're gradually put in.
Gradually.
And we're going to see what the impact is.
We are going to. And I don't think it's going to be bueno. Ask Seattle how their $15 an hour is working out for them. Let's keep it up. It's been a big week. So what are we going to talk about next, Doc? What do you think?
Nomination scenarios. Oh, yeah.
Love
President
it.
Of the United States. Big one.
Here we go. Next on the Think Tank.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right, we covered Star Wars, so that just eliminates my complete list right there. We covered Star Wars. We've got Trump building a wall and how he's going to get Mexico to pay for it. And we even covered some minimum wage. How about that? Check us out. We're rocking.
Tied it all together. International trade.
Rocking this whole
thing. Okay.
How about let's stay here for some presidential politics.
Presidential politics. We had some interesting stuff this week with the... The primary last week in Wisconsin put a little bit of kink in some of the projections. Hillary Clinton has taken another little hit. I still think she's close to inevitable.
Okay,
I can say
that comfortably right now as it stands. Yep. The next week or so is going to be interesting to see if the inevitable is still there.
Better win. If she loses New York or something, then there'll be wait a minute.
Yeah,
that would be you know. But
I would love a Trump Sanders general election. Can I tell you how much I would love that?
One,
he's so entertaining.
One really big thing that differentiates the Democrats and the Republicans. The Democrats are all proportional representation. And that means that Bernie Sanders won the Wisconsin primary by a decent amount.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up with 3 more delegates than she did. Okay.
Yeah.
Whereas Ted Cruz carries Wisconsin and he gets 100% of the delegates.
Right.
So it is very, very difficult to make up ground
On
the D side. On the R side, that's if somebody starts rolling the deck,
Kasich,
that's a different matter.
But here's the deal, though, with that. And I wrote an article for KTAR.com about this as well, because let's be real. There's no constitutional protections for voters in a primary. This is run by the DNC and the RNC, and they're playing by their rules, and they're showing us very clearly that they're playing by their rules. You might not like their rules, but guess what? They literally could take, like I said, I think I said a couple weeks ago, was they could take 100 phone calls and say the majority wins and that's who's going to be our nominee.
Here's
it would
the
be terrible, but they could do that.
Opportunity for mischief on the Republican side.
Ooh, I like mischief and shenanigans. Let's talk about this.
Yeah. The convention sets its own rules at the beginning of the convention.
Sure.
First ballot victory, we have heard is 50.1%.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They can change that.
Oh, heck yeah, they can.
They can make it 60.
Yeah.
Now, they have to live with the
consequences. They can make it the first person in with a green shirt wins it. It doesn't matter.
But if they made it 60, that is the nuclear option. That keeps Donald Trump from getting nominated on the first ballot. And by the way, I'd bet the farm, if he does not get nominated on the first ballot, he does not get nominated.
Oh, I would agree
because
with that.
Because item number two is that the delegates in 42 out of the 50 states are not chosen by the candidate.
Oy vey.
Okay. They are, for the most part, mainline party people.
Absolutely.
And it processes difference. Constantine Quinard here is an operative we've had on the show way back when. He's probably the top Republican political operative in Arizona. He's working for Ted Cruz. And they are in the process of selecting the delegates right now in Arizona, all of whom must be pledged to vote for Donald Trump on the first ballot. He is working to make sure that those are Ted Cruz people
on the second ballot. Right.
On anything
other than the first ballot. Right.
He's making sure that those are his people.
This is
now,
so fascinating.
I think that's probably atypical of the kind of person that is a convention delegate in most of the states. I think in most of the states you'll find they are the Republican establishment people, and they are terrified of Donald Trump and they despise Ted Cruz. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for option number three.
Right. Now, let's say this happens. First ballot, say they bump it to 60%. First ballot goes to Donald Trump at 52%, which in normal world, in normal RNC world, he'd be the nominee.
And he's not, and he goes predictably ballistic.
I cannot wait to see that. He is going, and this is what concerns me, because we had this discussion a few weeks ago. It doesn't really concern me, actually. It kind of fires me up.
But I'll tell you one other thing that I've noticed. There are all these Republican establishment figures who said Trump and Cruz. I mean, the one that came to my mind, Senator Graham.
Yes.
Said, between Trump and Cruz, what would I do? He said, that's like asking me, would I rather have myself shot in the head or take poison?
Nice.
Okay. Well, he has since gone and endorsed Ted Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that and a lot of other people have too.
Okay. Well, I think it's Walker. Interesting too, as well, as you look at Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio raised his hand. Excuse me, RNC. Can I keep my? I'd like to keep my delegates, please.
That's to stop Trump. I think that most of these endorsements for Ted Cruz are not sincere. I think they are for public consumption. And what they're saying to Republican voters is, if you haven't voted yet, we want you to vote for Ted Cruz. And the part they're not saying is they don't want Ted Cruz to win. They want to stop Donald Trump.
Yes.
They want option number three.
Right. But the thing that's fascinating about this, because I think a while back we were talking about, and I think all of us thought is it was, I would say, pretty common as a thought that if Trump runs as an independent, Hillary walks into the White House.
Yep.
But hang tight now. Because we've seen the power of Donald Trump. We've seen the power of his fans, right? We've seen how loud they can be. We've seen the support that can run behind the guy. He wins 4 or 5 states. Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
Do you see the arithmetic of that?
If he doesn't win states, then Hillary is elected.
There we go.
If he grabs a handful of states enough to prevent any person from getting to 270, then it goes to the House of Representatives, who will select an establishment Republican.
Exactly.
It will not be Ted Cruz. It will not be Donald Trump.
Most likely be my man, the Speaker of the House.
That's
probably Paul Ryan. Hey, let's be real.
A little.
And by the way, I'm a fan.
Little bit of braggadocio here.
Bring it.
Okay. October, there is a Huffington Post article that I published on October 30, 2012.
Okay.
6 days before the last presidential election. And I said, well, there's a couple of real winners here. Obviously, the big winner is whoever gets elected president. But regardless of that, I see two big winners coming out of this election.
Okay.
This is 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton and
Paul Ryan.
And Paul Ryan,
absolutely. Well, by the way, Paul Ryan has shown us nothing but his ability to play the RNC like a fiddle.
Yeah.
He is. And he plays the game well. And I think they would beg him and he would say, nah, you know, I don't really want to be president.
And I will tell you that I didn't anticipate this particular scenario of deadlock convention and Ryan sits it out. But I think he is the most likely option.
Sure. Three. Absolutely.
Why? Because he's basically Tea Party, but he's gotten in the speakership and he's shown that he wants to govern.
Yes.
You know, passing some budget.
Sure.
He got the budget out of the way, so we're not talking about that at all. That was a potential death trap for the Republicans if they were tempted to close down the government again or something like that.
Yeah.
That would guarantee a Democratic victory. He said, that's not going to happen. We're going to more or less do steady state and pass everything. And so I think more than any candidate, they thought Rubio would be this guy, but he turned out not to be. But I'm talking about somebody who's okay with the Tea Party and okay with the establishment, and that is a razor's edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he may be the guy. So
now,
of course, if that goes to him, I think there's both an advantage and a disadvantage for the Republicans. The advantage is he's unscathed. Nobody's taken pot
he's
shots
personable.
At him.
He's a good-looking cat. He's young. Yeah. He seems like he's working on both sides
of the
aisle.
And somebody hasn't been tried to tear him down for the last year.
Amen to that.
I mean, you've seen Trump, Cruz, Hillary, you name it. There is a lot of negatives out there for everybody who's a viable candidate now, because the other sides have been shooting at him. Nobody's shooting at Paul Ryan. The one difficulty that they will have is we've gone through this whole process for a year, and millions and tens of millions of people have voted, and not one person will have voted for Paul Ryan, and there's going to be a lot of people who don't like that fact.
Well, okay, but I think they'd get over quickly on the R side of the ball, at least, because the entire party begged him to do what he's doing right now. I think he has that momentum. He knows that if he is the nominee, that he would have the complete, undivided backing of the Republican Party.
The habitual Republican voters would find him acceptable. The tough sell would be to that 5 or 10% that's left, the independents who are scratching their head and said, who voted for this guy?
But we also did see him in a general election before. Mm-hmm. We have seen him, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
I mean, he was a VP candidate.
But I'm talking about the legitimacy of the nomination.
Understood.
No, not having ever faced a primary voter.
And
the party aligned behind him more than any candidate. But the independents scratching their head, what's the legitimate? Who is this guy and where'd you pull him from? That's the downside. The upside is he's unscathed. Nobody's been shooting at him for the last year.
And his Secret Service name is?
I don't know.
Bo Hunter. He has my vote right there. Done. Done and done. Yeah, there it is. All right, Doc, what's up next? What do you want to do?
Supreme Court.
Ooh, I like
and
the
what
Supreme Court.
What could happen if the composition of the court changes?
All right, that's next on Think Tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we just added, we did a lot of work in that last segment. I'm not going to lie to you. We got through a broker convention. We got through voting. We got through delegates. We found out what Paul Ryan's Secret Service name is. Holy cow. There you go. Now, see?
Whole lot.
Making fun
You're
of
have
me
to
before the show.
Explain what.
Yeah.
What are you laughing about?
Doc was making fun of me before the show because I couldn't get the music in my headphones. And he was like, I've been waiting 2 years to make fun of you for that. And then here we go. I forgot to turn your mic on.
I'm not a technical guy. I'm a policy guy.
Let's talk Supreme Court, Doc.
Okay. Here's an interesting article I pulled out of the Atlantic. And it's about what could happen if the composition of the Supreme Court ends up a little bit less conservative.
Going lefty.
And this is not specifically about Merrick Garland, because I think by every indication, he is as centrist and as conservative a justice as any Democrat would ever appoint.
Okay. I'll give you that.
He would have been a very viable appointment by H.W. Bush, for example, sort of the cut of a suitor. You know?
Okay, right.
I think he would be absolutely the center on the court. And I think the other thing, he might upset this tendency of the court to go 5-4 in that if you've got a contentious issue, you can do it one of two ways. You can go down 5-4 and you can say, let's have a majority wins.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can say, let us compromise on the issues enough that we can get everybody on board. And the court has habitually done that with really incredibly important cases, that Brown versus Board of Education being an example. Mm-hmm. They said, you know, if we do this narrowly and we come out 5-4 or 6-3, this was a jolting thing to the public at the time. It was, I mean, we had segregated schools in half the country, and you're telling everybody their kids' schooling is going to be completely disrupted and changed. That's a big deal.
Right.
That's a big change.
Huge.
And even with the unanimous vote, they couldn't get it implemented. And by the way, they had two parts. They said, do it with all deliberate speed, which in the South was interpreted as when hell freezes
exactly,
over.
Yeah, next decade they or came three.
Well, and that's what it was. In 1969, they came down and said, okay, now, do
it's
it
time.
Now. In the summer of 1969, they said, don't open in the fall. And of course, people had gotten used to the idea. There was still a lot of pushback in private academies and all that. But
well, they saw, other, you know, in a lot like this, like when you're dealing with same-sex marriage and things like that, the nation saw, okay, there's states that are doing it and the world hasn't exploded yet. Oh, okay. Yeah. The country didn't fall apart. Oh, okay. And they became kind of okay or used to the idea that that wave is coming anyway. So I think that's what
they just
us.
Had a big case where they were unanimous. And I think it was sort of the same. It was the issue of voting apportionment.
Yes.
And since the founding of this country, voting apportionment has been based upon people, not upon voters. And there was a Texas challenge said we want to go with voters.
Sure.
Which would basically change 200 years of constitutional history. And they, I think, by the virtue of the fact that it was 8-0, saw that this was a fundamental enough thing that they just wanted to show unanimity.
Sure.
This is a solid principle. Don't relitigate this. This is the way it's been, and it's not going to change.
And isn't that what we want? And I think from the outsider's perspective, people that aren't like you and I, Doc, that really dig into these kinds of things a lot, and it's kind of our joy. It's kind of our hobby in what we do. That we see that we talk about the 5-4, 5-4, 5-4. It seems like the justices, from an outsider's perspective, are jumping in with the president, the party of the president that nominated them. Do you see more than this is a conservative person or this is a more
way
liberal person?
More so than has ever been the case in our history.
I would probably think that.
That is a relatively new thing.
But to us, you know, you talk about my 40 years on this earth versus the 230 something we've had here in the United States. Well, relatively to me, that's the way the court's always been.
And if you go back to like in the 50s, Eisenhower Court and all that. There's always some left-right kind of split, but it wasn't by party. I mean, Earl Warren was appointed by Eisenhower. He said it was the worst mistake he ever made, but he was appointed by Eisenhower. Other justices who've been on the court have modified their views over a period of time, and so they surprised their president.
Sure.
But much more now we're taking on people who have strong ideological leanings. And so anyway, but to answer your question, I think people are divided on there. There are people who have their issue and they want to win and they want a 5-4 decision that comes down on their side. To get to 9-0 or something a lot more lopsided, what you end up with is a much more compromised decision. And I will give you an example, and that was Brown versus Board. They were unanimous 9-0 on the principle, and then they had a second phase of the decision had to do with implementation. And that's when they had a mealy-mouthed kind of said with all deliberate speed.
Oh, yes, that's right, yes.
Which
to most states meant
Some states, they implemented immediately. In others, they were clearly engaged in obstruction to the point where they had no intention of doing it ever. And that's why 15 years later, the court came down and said, okay, enough now.
So to today, and I think the same theory you were just speaking of goes against Merrick. So Merrick Garland, correct? I get them. First and last. Maybe it's the legal way. Maybe it's the legal way. Yeah, maybe it's the legal way.
The name could have been the other direction.
Sure, exactly. All right, so for all intents and purposes, the most conservative liberal that could possibly be nominated has, from the other side, from the right, has three strikes against him. Could be the most centerline, fairest Supreme Court judge in the history of the Supreme Court, but...
He will not be Scalia.
But, okay, no, he won't be. Okay, we know he won't be Scalia. Yeah. Okay, but here's the deal. Abortion, gun rights, and President Obama nominated him. That's strike one, two, and three.
Well, not yet. Number one, abortion is the clearest thing. You put a fifth vote on there, and Roe v. Wade is affirmed, and attempts to evade it go away.
Absolutely.
Number two, access to the courts. The recent more conservative court has made it more difficult to do class action suits and the like. It would clearly push that in another direction. Affirmative actions, we had about five justices, one of them being Scalia, who seemed to be willing to restrict or even declare as unconstitutional various kinds of affirmative action, particularly by colleges and universities.
Sure.
A more centrist or a more liberal would probably gently lean the court in another direction. It's still a very divided court, but it would make it a little bit more. I think one of the other big ones is campaign finance. Citizens United, which has been widely criticized. Basically, you know, that's the one that said corporations can spend unlimited amounts of money to get candidates elected.
Sure.
And of late can even do it without revealing it. And, you know, somebody more in the center on the left are going to might be willing to revisit that decision.
Right.
And they do. The Supreme Court revisits decisions very, very rarely. But when they do, it's a very big deal. For example, Brown v. Board was a complete reversal of a prior decision from 50 years before.
OK. But we're going to this time right now. Mm-hmm. I see that as President Barack Obama appointed the guy, and that's just not – he nominated the guy, and that's just not going to happen for most of the people, I would say for a good half the country, because Barack Obama said, and so it's got to be some crazy socialist lefty, and there's no way they're going to – I don't care what the voting record says. And then I think we go to gun rights and we go to abortion. I think those are the biggest ones. I think those that get a little more into the weeds like you were right there, they can see that. But I think from a 30,000-foot view, those are the ones that – are holding him back from just skating
in. You imagine, and I know it's near and dear to you, but
I'm holding my Second Amendment
mode. Of the country in 1789 until 2008, not once did the Supreme Court ever find a law violated the Second Amendment.
Okay.
It was only from 2008 when they said this District of Columbia law is basically up until that point there, that Second Amendment was not interpreted as being an absolute right that adhered to the individual.
I'm talking about him specifically. Talking about this man specifically. I think that goes, he's got three strikes against him. It's just not going to happen.
There was one case he did that the NRA didn't like.
And there you go. That's what I'm saying. The 30,000-foot view from the Joe Public view. That's what it is.
You know,
go, plug.
Problem. Plug.
Do it.
MikeO'Neill.org. Click on the radio button. You can get all of our shows, sans commercials even.
Those are available on KTAR.com as well, the Think Tank show page. Doc, thanks
so
much.
Good luck finding it on the KTAR.
Oh, come
page.
On.
They
got to
put us
now,
more prominently.
Come on,
somewhere.
More prominently. We need top art every day. Holy cow. Thanks for spending some time with us. Had a great time today talking to Doc O'Neill. I'm Mike Russell. This is Think Tank, KTAR News.